From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. The headlines of late have been dominated by the fight for the future of New Orleans and the debate over immigration rights. Here to discuss these topics and more are Mark Morial, president and CEO of the National Urban League, and the Reverend Jesse Jackson, president of Rainbow Push Coalition. I should note the first Monday of every month, we're usually joined by Mr. Morial and Bruce Gordon, head of the NAACP, to discuss topics affecting the black community. Bruce Gordon is traveling this week, so we're very happy to have the Reverend Jackson with us. Gentlemen, welcome. Mark, let me start with you. In talking about the fight over the future of New Orleans, obviously a key seat will be that of the mayor's office, with the runoff coming off with Landreau and Nagin. How do you see things to this point?
I think it's a highly competitive race. One of the things that continues to concern me is the level of voter participation. For example, in the primary, about 108,000 people voted. This was the smallest number of people who voted in a mayor's race in New Orleans in perhaps 40, maybe 50 years. So it's competitive, and I think what I hear from people is they want the recovery of the city to be energized. They want a sense of unification around the direction of the city, and it's a highly competitive race, and I think it's going to be very aggressive campaigning down to the end.
Reverend, I know that you have been addressing this specifically, the idea that you want to make sure that displaced voters have an opportunity to speak their minds.
Picking up on what Mark has said, there was a low voter turnout, but with two-thirds of the people in exile, it was really a high turnout, a very enthusiastic turnout. If the two-thirds in exile had, for example, had satellite access and didn't have the onerous burden of having to drive so far, for example, first-time voters and about 14,000 of them must return to New Orleans to vote by state law. That's an awesome burden. If you are a resident, you live, say, in New York, you live in Houston or Mississippi, for that matter, you must send for your ballot. It comes back to you. You then must get two witnesses, a notarized affidavit, and send it back to Baton Rouge. They then take it to New Orleans. These goings-on undermine the easy access. What is interesting is that the Iraqi Americans could have on-site same-day registration, 17 forms of ID, and vote in Iraq with U.S. troops escorting them. Will not provide the same access to New Orleans for New Orleanians. And our issue is that easy and fair access.
Yeah, and you believe that this was really counter to the Voting Rights Act of 1965, what we've seen here.
That's the real deal. The Voting Rights Act of 65 was an intervention after 95 years of states' rights control, where states control race relations and labor and education. And the right wing never agreed what we call intervention for relief. They call interposition and nullification. They never agreed. And now that you have essentially states' rights federal government, they suspend the enforcement of voting rights standards and threw it to the state for the first time in 41 years. So what did the state do? The Secretary of State either will not give the voting rolls to the candidates. So they don't know who's eligible. They cannot write them, call them, visit them. And those who are eligible did not know who was running. So if you cannot get access to the list and can't get satellite voting, I mean, old poll tax may have been marked $3 or $4, but to go up to Atlanta twice back and forth to New Orleans is much more expensive.
Mark,
you
said...
I want to add two quick things on that, and I think the Reverend is right, but one thing was interesting to me is that many candidates apparently got the list because, as an absentee voter myself, I received a number of pieces of mail from candidates who offered themselves in various races. But the more important issue, and the Reverend touched on this, and I want to illuminate this, and that is voting rights enforcement. In this case, civil rights organizations and interested citizens both went to court, where the court failed to enforce what we think the Voting Rights Act's letter and spirit required. Secondly, we went to the Department of Justice, and they failed to step in and really enforce the Voting Rights Act. So we have to highlight the fact that it's not only the law, but those elected officials sworn to uphold the law, both judges and those in the Justice Department, have to enforce the letter and the spirit of the Voting Rights Act. That's what greatly concerns me. We made great efforts, I think, a wide range, the Rainbow, the Urban League, the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, and many, many others, Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights, to try to get the court to intervene and to force satellite voting outside of the state. Not only that, heroic legislators like Senator Charles Jones and Senator Cleo Fields and others sought numerous times in the Louisiana State Legislature to get the legislature to voluntarily create satellite voting outside of the state. The fact is you had it in the state, it wouldn't have been difficult to have it outside of the state. And these are issues that we have to illuminate as we go on. Where it is now, I think, Ed, is that a strong encouragement from me to anyone who's listening who may be a voter in New Orleans to take advantage of whatever opportunity is available to participate. A lot is on the line.
All right, let me do this very quickly and then make your point very quickly because I've got to get us to the immigration debate. But of the two, and I'll ask you both just one way or the other very quickly, do you think one man has an advantage over the other in terms of direction for the future of this city? Mark, you've sat in this that chair
you
before.
You know, I'm required to be nonpartisan in my current position, but really have a very strong view, Ed, that the recovery has been so inadequate. I mean, the city, I've visited 9-10 times back home, garbage everywhere, no housing plan in place. Somehow, somebody, some way has to energize this and get this going. And the responsibility is not just on local government, but it's on state and the federal government. But the fact of the matter is that the future of the city is at stake. We could lose New Orleans. That's the truth.
All right, Reverend, what about you?
Well, the plan of recovery, there is no definite plan for recovery. The federal government has abdicated its responsibility again. Our concern is that who wins the local issue? Our protected right to vote is everybody's issue. And my fear is that if they suspend the Voting Rights Act in Louisiana, it can have broad application. What people can do who are listening now, if you are Katrina survivor, whoever you are now, please send for your ballot today. Send for your ballot today. That's issue number two. We're asking people for the next 3 weeks to picket at your local federal building on Saturdays from 11 to 2. Just to say,
every Saturday for the next 3 weeks.
Yeah, the point is that if we can have satellites for Baghdad and Fallujah, why not New Orleans? Make that a matter of public consciousness. Demonstrations and mass education matters.
All right, Reverend, of those two men, do you believe one can lead the city any better than the other?
Well, I do, except that's not my issue, and I do not want to get into that today. My concern is that, no, but the point is that the real issue.
That's important. That's important. If somebody believes, if we say we're going to lose New Orleans, it's important if you believe that one can lead the city better than the other.
Well,
that is important.
Well, it's important that the citizens who are in exile from there have the right to make that determination.
All right.
Clearly, at this point, Landry has an advantage. I mean, the other three guys, they can get 41,000 votes. The three white guys got 60,000. They're all endorsing him. Those who are the least able and the least mobile are in exile. Those who are the most able and the most mobile are there at home. So those who are there on the ground have advantage of those who are in exile.
All right, I've got to take us to something that is very important. And today we're seeing movement over the illegal immigration debate. Mark Morial, we're looking at today the boycott, and obviously this is going to be one in a number of steps. Where do you think the black community falls in this in terms of either looking at this as an aid, or is this something that we just watch from the sidelines?
Well, I think that we're not going to be able to continue to simply watch from the sidelines. But what I think our issue is of wages for workers, increasing the minimum wage, trying to ensure that the broader issue. I'm very concerned that there's a chance here that African Americans and immigrants, and let's be really accurate on this, while the most visible people involved in this movement are of Hispanic and Latino descent, the fact of the matter is that there are many black immigrants here in the United States from places like Haiti, Africa, Brazil, and other communities around the nation, around the world, rather. And so I think one of our important roles is to ensure that the discussion also includes fair treatment for them. Haitians have not been treated on even par, for example, with Cubans when it comes to immigration. And you could continue to look at that issue. So I think that it's becoming clearly a broad human rights issue. I think that have to be honest, very impressed with the way in which these communities have organized themselves and in the spirit of the civil rights movement of the 1960s have organized really mass protests.
Reverend, with a little less than 2 minutes to go, Mark brings up a good point. The media has painted it as a brown face, but there is a black face in this fight, too.
Well, there are more Africans south of the border than there are in North America. are African Brazilians, African Mexicans, African Colombians, and that's a piece of it. But I think a bigger issue, this thing is employer and cheap labor driven. They want to make this a race frame. It's an economic frame. For example, Walmart would be the postal corporation. Walmart's purchasing department is in China. $20 billion a year, dollar a day labor. They export capital and jobs to China. But all Walmart is also the largest employer of undocumented workers here. So they use cheap labor in China to make the product and cheap labor here for the workforce. So in many ways, the employers are the ones who are driving the agenda of cheap labor brought in cheap labor here. I hope it does not become a race frame where we get trapped black against brown. We, in fact, should all be demanding livable wages for all workers and health care and benefits.
All right, I've got to stop it here, but I should note that the Reverend Jesse Jackson was on the march, a peace march this weekend, as well as a march to bring attention to the problem which we're about to talk about in our roundtable in Darfur, and hopefully we'll be able to talk to you a little bit more about that in the immediate future. The Reverend Jesse Jackson is president of the Rainbow Push Coalition, and Mark Morial is president and CEO of the National Urban League. Gentlemen, I thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Ed. Thanks, Reverend.
Thank you, Mark.